the strategy that we got from the Pentagon last week and the budget situation that we find ourselves in means that we're going to be seeing a reconstituted Air Force is probably a better name for it than a shrinking Air Force. What are your thoughts about what you're seeing and hearing and learning about what the force will look like moving forward?
The force of the future is, first let me say, the Air Force is in a real tough spot. We haven't bought enough airplane force in the last two decades to keep it modern. The average age is now a quarter of a century for each of the airplanes. So it's got to modernize, yet at the same time, maintenance costs are driving up through the roof because they've got an older fleet and planes are breaking in unusual ways. I think the strategy puts a premium on air, space, and naval forces going forward, and of course it shifts the focus toward the Pacific, and that's going to present new challenges of distance. And if anybody's ever flown out to Japan or Korea or Okinawa or even Guam, you'll know what I'm talking about.
I haven't flown out there, but I certainly looked at a globe on Friday evening after the strategy came out and saw that very thing, that just the amount of air power and sea power that will be necessary to execute this strategy will be much more robust, if executed correctly, I imagine, than what we have now. What are you seeing? We've covered the F-35 situation to the nth degree on this station, and so that we know about what's going on there. The whole drone situation is another element here. The Air Force starting to add a lot more drones and so on. What do you see as necessary, rather than what's actually in the fleet right now, what do you see as necessary to be able to execute the strategy that the Pentagon's talking about?
Well, I think they need more emphasis on long-range air. We have a bomber force that's down into the 80s to 90s. It's aged. It's headed by the B-52, which is 50 years old. So the new long-range strike system, family of systems, is going to be absolutely critical to proceed on and to field these new bombers. I think also it puts a premium on space assets because and command and control, because you've got to be able to see what's going on in the theater over the horizon, so to speak, and you've got to be able to watch and have a pretty much constant presence in space to be able to determine, you know, how you're going to use your military forces and what you're going to do with them. I do want to say I'm hearing that the Air Force is going to cut about 300 airplanes, not 200 airplanes. And that's significant because, like I said, I think they're in a tough spot. They've got older systems that are going to age out in any regards, and they've got to focus on buying new things.
Are the appropriate planes to replace what's aging out in the pipeline now? Do you like what you're seeing as far as the F-35 and some of the other planes that are coming into the fleet?
That's a very interesting question. I think, I don't want to go back and revisit history, but, you know, if you were a king for a day looking backwards as well as forwards, I think you would keep the F-22 in place. I think you'd keep that production line open as a hedge against problems with the F-35 system, and you might even do a fly-off between the two systems. I do believe that the space assets are in good shape and have been continually funded. We've got a relatively new cargo fleet. The C-17 is the backbone of that fleet. It's doing quite well. I might add it's 21 years old, and it's a 30-year lifespan, so something's going to have to happen with that airplane pretty soon. I think we need some new weapons. The AMRAAM missile is a little older than I'd like, and there's no real standoff cruise missile that's in the force now that is modern and can get by some of the systems they're going to face in a highly defended area.
Based on, obviously, we don't know specifically intelligence-wise what every single other country is doing, but based on what we do know and based on what you and your connections have told you, where do we stand competitively when it comes to the air forces of other countries, including potential adversaries?
Hey, that's a great question. We are head and shoulders ahead of other countries. We know that China has a fifth-generation fighter under development, and so does Russia. We know that they were rolled out ahead of when we expected, And with the delays in the F-35 program, we know we've got that they're going to be fielded at about the same time. I would make the point that we have more experience with stealth technology, and in that regard, I know that both China and Russia are going to have some issues that we've already faced and proceeded to solve. But I have to point out that we're playing an away game. So we've got these long distances to go, and whereas China, for example, across the Taiwan Strait, they can generate airplanes from a number of different bases, launch them on short duration missions, and go back home to refuel and fly another one, whereas mm-hmm. we have to refuel and conduct operations over very long distances.
General, I appreciate you being with me this afternoon. Final question. In light of the budget cuts that are coming, where would you focus your priorities based on the list of wishes that you just gave me?
I would cut older airplanes, and I would actually take out force structure. As you know, manpower is tied to force structure. The big problem with the Department of Defense in terms of spending is it has to keep its forces sharp. They can't have hollow forces. We have to keep a modern technological advantage over any potential adversaries in the future, so we have to spend on R&D. We have to spend on acquisition. O&M money, I think we can take some risk with and do some creative things like simulation instead of all the flying hours we're flying, perhaps. I do think that that avoiding a hollow force will be absolutely essential, and trying to get the Air Force as modern as we can, as fast as we can, will be very important.